Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Imagine you spend, like, the better part of a decade tasked with designing a next-generation power plant.
Oh, that's a massive undertaking.
Right. And you and your team obsess over every conceivable metric. I mean, the thermodynamics are flawless. The structural math is absolute perfection.
You've checked every single box.
Exactly. And then you flip the switch on day one, and you just watch the entire grid fail spectacularly.
Which is devastating.
It is. And the kicker here is that it doesn't fail because your thermal equations were wrong. It fails because of, well, interdepartmental office politics that bottlenecked a critical software update.
Or, you know, an unseasonably cold morning froze a valve that the vendor swore up and down was weather rated.
Yeah, precisely.
It happens far more often than the industry really likes to admit, to be honest.
Which is exactly why I wanted to get into our source material for today's deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking at a highly anticipated 2024 book by Avner Engel. It's called System Science for Engineers and Scholars.
It's a really fascinating text.
It is.
Yep.
And going through the notes, the core tension we need to resolve for you, the listener, is whether this text is merely descriptive.
Like, is it just observing the world and categorizing it in some new way?
Right. Or is it fiercely prescriptive? Does it actually hand systems engineers a tangible toolkit to, you know, level up their skills and stop those spectacular disasters before they happen?
Avner Engel is definitely taking a massive swing here. I mean, he's attempting to lay down a framework that essentially unifies the entire universe of problem solving.
From exploding stars to flocking birds to human psychology.
Exactly. But before we can get to how the book prescribes solutions for engineers, we first need to understand how it describes the universe.
You have to know the rules of the game first.
Right. You cannot fix the machine until you understand the underlying rules of the environment it's operating in. So he outlines these 10 fundamental principles of system science that he argues apply to everything.
Right. He talks about things like universal context, boundary.
Hierarchy, complexity, emergence. It's a very comprehensive list.
And he basically defines system science as an interdisciplinary field, right?
Yeah.
One that studies the foundation of systems in nature, society, and engineering all at once.
Yeah. And if you are working in DevOps or aerospace or civil infrastructure, you are probably already intimately familiar with the major problem Engel identifies right out of the gate.
It's the functional silo syndrome?
Yes. The term was coined back in 1988, but it is just wild how persistent it remains today.
Oh, absolutely.
You still have physicists, biologists, and engineers all sitting in their own isolated towers.
Using totally different vocabulary.
Exactly. Missing the bigger picture entirely. They might be working on the exact same aerospace project, but they're optimizing entirely different metrics because they only view the system through their specific lens.
Okay, let's unpack this because I was trying to visualize his whole framework earlier. It's kind of like a Russian nesting doll.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right, because you can't just look at one wooden doll and say you understand it. You have to understand that the doll sits inside a larger one.
Which would be its context or environment.
Exactly. And it contains smaller ones,
right,
which represents its hierarchy.
What's fascinating here is how the book uses that nested structural thinking to reveal what Engel calls isomorphic relationships.
Isomorphic. Let's define that for a second.
Yeah. So isomorphism refers to finding structural similarities across completely different fields. Engel proves that if you drill down to those fundamental principles, the rules governing a biological cell might actually be the exact same rules governing a computer hard drive.
I was absolutely blown away by his comparative analysis on this. It's so cool. He takes the structure of DNA within a cell's nucleus and maps it directly onto how a computer hard drive formats and stores data.
It's a perfect one-to-one mapping, really?
Yeah. A biological cell has a semi-permeable membrane acting as a boundary. You know, managing what goes in and out.
Right.
Which is exactly like the physical casing and the input-output ports of a hard drive.
And the mechanism goes even deeper than that. Think about how DNA uses four chemical bases to encode genetic instructions.
Across the double helix, yeah.
Right. Well, a hard drive uses binary magnetic states encoded across tracks and sectors on a physical platter. When RNA polymerase transcribes DNA, it is structurally mirroring the exact function of a read-write head scanning a disk sector.
That's wild. The physical materials are completely different, like carbon and water versus silicon and magnetism.
But the underlying systemic architecture, that isomorphism, is identical.
Okay, so recognizing that a cell and a hard drive are similar is intellectually satisfying. But as an engineer listening to this, you might be asking, how do I actually use that on a random Tuesday morning?
Right, because a hard drive isn't undergoing cellular mitosis.
Exactly, and this is the exact pivot point where the book shifts from just describing the world to becoming a deeply prescriptive toolkit for engineers.
Because finding that isomorphism opens up a totally new menu of design options. The book prescribes that engineers actively borrow solutions from completely different domains.
Because biology has had, what, billions of years of ruthless trial and error?
Exactly. It's been beta testing solutions to complex problems forever. Engel gives this brilliant example regarding mechanical interfaces.
Oh, the one with the moving structural components.
Yeah. So traditionally, an engineer is strictly looking at spatial constraints or material fatigue or thermal expansion, but Engel prescribes stepping entirely out of that engineering silo and looking at ecology instead.
Right. He brings up the six types of biological interactions among species.
Predation, mutualism, commensalism.
Parasitism, competition, and herbivory.
Yes. And applying those models forces an engineer to radically rethink design alternatives. Take commensalism, for example.
That's where one organism benefits without affecting the other at all.
Exactly. So an engineer might look at that and design a mechanical interface where a secondary cooling system passively siphons the ambient airflow generated by a primary rotor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they gain a massive thermal advantage without introducing any parasitic drag to the main system.
Or they could use mutualism, right? Where two distinct mechanical beams are engineered to dynamically share and distribute a load during extreme thermal expansion.
Instead of just fighting each other until one fractures, yes.
It's just so clever. It unlocks creative solutions you would never find in a standard structural engineering textbook.
The book also tackles the principle of emergence. You know, where a system does something, its individual parts are utterly incapable of doing alone.
Right, and to understand emergence, Engel suggests studying bird murmurations.
Those massive flocks of starlings.
Yeah, the ones that move like liquid smoke in the sky. It's incredibly relevant if you're designing swarming UAVs, like unmanned aerial vehicles.
Because those birds don't have a central command bird orchestrating the flight path.
No, they follow incredibly simple local rules. Just maintain minimum separation to avoid collision, align your steering with your neighbors, and move toward the average position of the flock.
And if you translate those exact biological algorithms into UAV software, engineers can build drone fleets that just self-organize.
You completely eliminate the need for a massive, vulnerable central computer.
Yeah.
The swarming behavior just emerges organically. He also mentions termite mounds for passive climate control in civil engineering, right?
Yes, another great example.
Okay, but let me push back on the premise here for a second.
Sure.
Wait a minute. An airplane isn't a bird. Living things evolve on their own, but machines don't. I mean, how far can we really take this biological analogy before it just entirely breaks down?
It's a very valid critique, and Engel actually anticipates it. He draws a very sharp distinction when he talks about the evolution principle.
Okay, what's the distinction?
He clarifies that living systems evolve to harmonize with their context, but inanimate systems, machines, they are modified by humans to satisfy their context.
Oh, okay. So the human engineer is basically the evolutionary pressure for the machine.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the prescriptive value for an engineer's skill set isn't to pretend that a server rack is a living, breathing organism. The goal is to vastly expand their menu of problem-solving options beyond just standard physics and math.
Which brings us to perhaps the most dangerous source of chaos in any system, human beings.
Whoa, without a doubt.
We've established how borrowing from nature helps engineers design better systems. But the book argues that the most spectacular failures don't come from bad physics.
No, they come from ignoring the human and environmental context surrounding the system.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because engineering is traditionally seen as this purely objective math-based field. But Engel dedicates all of Chapter 15 to engineering and systemic psychology.
He treats human psychology as a critical structural component. He argues that systems engineers must account for schema theory and cognitive biases.
Schema theory being like the underlying mental frameworks we use to interpret information.
Exactly. Because systems engineers are human, their biases naturally lead to systems pathologies.
He points out that you can take two highly experienced systems engineers, give them the exact same SE procedures and specs, and they will design completely different pipe interfaces.
The T-joint example, yes.
Right. One engineer designs a simple, cheap, welded T-joint because their schema prioritizes cost efficiency.
while the other engineer, whose schema prioritizes future adaptability, designs a flexible but far more expensive flange T-joint.
Based solely on their subjective interpretations of the exact same math, building a perfect machine is completely useless if the human organization running it is fundamentally flawed.
And the book backs this up with massive historical failures caused by ignoring that holistic context.
Like the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster.
Exactly. The engineering teams explicitly warned against launching due to the low temperatures. But management schema prioritized the launch schedule and optics. They ignored the warnings, and the vehicle was destroyed.
He also cites the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster, right?
Yes. The utility management basically ignored geologists' warnings about mega tsunamis. They built a brilliant machine, but ignored the environmental context of where it was sitting.
Okay, so if human bias and these chaotic environments are the real dangers, how does the book prescribe we actually manage that risk daily? You can't just run a software patch for corporate hubris.
No, you can't. To improve their skills, the book prescribes that engineers must actively practice cognitive debiasing.
And he brings up Abraham Lincoln for this, which I thought was fascinating.
Yes, Lincoln's team of rivals.
Right. Lincoln put his fiercest political opponent in his cabinet so he'd have dissenting opinions in the room.
Engel literally prescribes adopting this strategy for engineering teams. You have to actively seek out rivals and dissenting opinions to overcome your own individual blind spots. That is how you build more resilient systems.
Which leads right into the book's ultimate skill upgrade for engineers.
Oh.
A totally new framework for learning from failure.
Because Engel is highly critical of traditional risk management.
Yeah, he says traditional risk management views failure as a single static event, right? Which leads to single loop learning.
Exactly. Single loop learning is basically just rectifying the immediate problem without asking why it happened.
So what does this all mean? Let me use a relatable analogy here. If my car tire blows out, single loop learning is just slapping on the spare tire and calling it a day.
Right. Problem fixed, theoretically.
But multi-loop learning is taking a step back to ask, wait, am I driving on a road covered in nails? Or is my daily commute route the actual root cause of the problem?
That's a great analogy. Instead of single loop, he prescribes the systems of systems failures methodology, or SOSF. It strongly advocates for that multi-loop learning.
He also highlights STAMP, right? The systems theoretic accident model and process.
Yes. STAMP is crucial because it treats accidents not simply as broken parts, but as complex socio-technical breakdowns.
Right. The system failed because the control structure, the human element, failed to manage the risk.
And this raises an important question about how engineers actually measure success. Usually, engineers measure success by checking if the system meets its internal goals.
Like, did the engine turn on? Yes. Success.
Exactly. But the book prescribes that a highly skilled systems engineer absolutely must enlarge the system boundary.
To include the stakeholders and the environment.
And the multi-loop feedback. You have to ensure that your fix doesn't just create a new, unexpected side effect somewhere else in the ecosystem.
Because you're no longer just responsible for the machine itself.
You're responsible for its entire footprint.
So to wrap up this review and directly answer the focus of today's deep dive for you, the listener. System Science for Engineers and Scholars is an intensely prescriptive guide, but it's wrapped in a really brilliant descriptive scientific framework.
It doesn't just tell you what to do. It shows you structurally why you need to do it.
Exactly. It improves an engineer's skills by basically forcing them to abandon their silos, borrow brilliant designs from biology, ruthlessly audit their own psychological biases.
The team of rivals concept.
Right. And above all, it forces them to treat human context as a vital engineering component, not just an afterthought.
It really is a paradigm shift for the field.
It is. So, to leave you with one final thought to mull over today, something that really stuck with me. As our modern engineered systems, like the global internet, autonomous vehicle fleets, or AI networks, as they become exponentially more complex, they're beginning to behave a lot more like biological ecosystems than traditional machines.
They exhibit emergence and unpredictability.
Right. So will the most successful systems engineers of tomorrow actually need to be trained as ecologists and psychologists rather than just mechanics and coders?
It's a fascinating question. The math will always matter, but the context might be what actually saves the system.
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.